time to chat with our opinionista for the morning, and in some respects, well, it was just another week of business as usual in the discussion of climate change and climate science. Andrew Bolt, well, he greeted the importation of new wind turbines.
A very expensive way to do nothing about a global warming that paused 16 years ago anyway.
The Daily Telegraph's Tim Blair, he warmed the theme.
It used to simply be called weather, which for a few hundred years was all we needed as a base term to describe whatever was happening outside. Then global warming, the phrase rather than the phenomenon, appeared. Global warming put in great service for a decade or so, until people began to notice that it wasn't really getting much warmer, at which point climate change was invoked.
Not getting any warmer. The folk at Real Science were in full agreement.
There's been no warming for over 15 years. People can have whatever conversations they want, but that doesn't mean they aren't complete morons.
And while the sceptics stayed sceptical, another global climate conference loomed. Michael Kyle at Quadrant was unimpressed.
Globetrotting promoters of the world's biggest scam meet in Qatar next week. There will be more fear-mongering, hand-wringing and head-shaking, but no handcuffs. Delegates will be allowed to come and go freely without fear of arrest for inciting public alarm for financial gain. Their mission impossible.
And elsewhere? Well, in a haze of patchouli, the hemp-clad hippies of the World Bank announced that...
without further commitments and action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, the world is likely to warm by more than 3 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial climate. Even with the current mitigation commitments and pledges fully implemented, there's roughly a 20% likelihood of exceeding 4 degrees Celsius by 2100. A 4 degrees Celsius world is likely to be one in which communities, cities and countries would experience severe disruptions, damage and dislocation, with many of these risks spread unequally. It's likely that the poor will suffer most, and the global community could become more fractured and unequal than today.
According to European Climate Commissioner Connie Hedegaard,
the world is not getting its act together fast enough. Despite the facts and evidence in front of us, there are still many interests advocating doing nothing, or just forgetting the climate crisis until we've solved the economic crisis.
At New Economy, Giles Parkinson spent a moment collating a sobering record of grim predictions.
First, the International Energy Agency warned that two-thirds of the world's fossil fuels will need to stay in the ground if such targets were to be met. Then the World Bank highlighted the fact that the world was heading to average global temperature rises of 4 degrees Celsius and devastating consequences on current trajectories. And yesterday, the World Meteorological Organization report revealed that greenhouse gas emissions reached record levels in 2011.
Oh dear. Giles Parkinson joins you now. Good morning, Giles. Welcome to Sunday Extra.
Oh, thanks, Jonathan.
That World Bank report, their talk of a reasonably strong possibility of reaching 4 degrees centigrade increases in temperature by the end of the century, it's a pretty serious prediction, and yet it doesn't seem to have made much of an impact news-wise. Do predictions that dire does not get any traction these days?
Look, it's hard to read. I think maybe because some of your predictions have been made in the past, and people are still waiting to see the temperatures go up for 4 degrees. It's just such a long term horizon for people. But the media's been playing a funny game on this. I think you quote a lot of the media, which has been from a certain media which just doesn't accept bias of climate change and doesn't accept the need for action. I think the other media has probably gone a little bit quiet on it for whatever reasons. But I do think that actually in the last couple of weeks, last couple of months, I think it's starting to gain a little bit of traction again, but it doesn't seem to be everyone's number one issue, even if it is the number one security threat, if you talk to business and military and even politicians.
There's that interesting discussion, I guess, about whether you can... whether you should let solving the climate crisis get in the way of solving the economic crisis, and however that interesting combination might play out, is that what's getting the other hand? Are we sort of we're more concerned now with the global economy rather than the global environment?
Well, I think we've been blindsided by in a lot of these ways. I mean, look, interestingly enough, there's actually this discussion now, even in U.S. Republican circles and even in European circles, that maybe actually having a carbon tax in, or a carbon price in America, or even a higher one in Europe, which a lot of people are pushing for, is actually a way of solving their sort of fiscal problems. That's probably not the reason why you actually have those things, but I mean, they're sort of struggling for reasons to actually, or sort of to for broader justification to implement them. But all this does suggest that it's just the cheapest and the most logical way to go. But there's such a difference between what people say they want to do and how they're going to achieve it. It's extraordinary.
Now, we're about to have another week of saying what we want to do with another big climate confab in Doha. Now, you wrote rather interestingly this week about our success thus far in hitting targets on emission reductions, because that's, of course, where the rubber hits the road here. We need to do something concrete. How are we tracking on those targets currently?
Well, Australia is tracking its target quite well, because it's got a very easy target to make. It actually was allowed to lift its emissions by 8% under the Kyoto Treaty. And even if it implements its 5% reduction target by 2020, which is its bipartisan target, the actual net effect from the 1990 levels is not really that much different. I think one of the things that was pointed out by the World Bank, and also there's another report from the United Nations this week, it said that the world has agreed in Copenhagen, didn't actually agree how it was going to do it, but it just agreed that, look, we should try and keep global warming average temperature rises to 2 degrees, because that gives us the best chance of meeting those climate change targets. All the major countries made these pledges saying, well, this is what we'll do, this is what we will do. But even that falls short, and that still falls within that 4 degree scenario that... that the World Bank was talking about, which has frightening consequences. Even the bigger worry is that we're not even as a globe, even those pledges. So we're actually well short of that. We're actually still almost on a business as usual case, which seems to be condemning us to an average temperature increase of 6 degrees. So we're just so far short. The UN came up with this report called the Gigaton Gap, and it says that we're supposed to keep the emissions down to 44 gigatons by 2020, and we're at the moment on a rise for 580 gigatons. 58 gigatons. So it's 44, and this is 44 and 58. It's quite a huge difference.
But this is the thing. I mean, it is huge, and as you say, business as usual takes us to a catastrophic place, really, if that's the temperature rise over the century. I mean, is this why the discussion is so tricky? Because we're getting to the point of reality now where the cuts in emissions have to be quite dramatic to make any real impact.
They do, and the discussions at the global level have always bogged down on who has the most responsibility, who has the historical responsibility. The Western world, the developed world, has put most emissions up in the atmosphere up until now, but in the future it's going to be the developing countries which are putting most emissions up there. So who acts first, who takes the greatest role in it, it's a depressing sight. I've been to these international climate talks on several occasions, it's depressing and frustrating to see them agree to basically nothing at the end of these talks, apart from the fact that they should meet again next year.
Well, we're about to have more talks. Are targets on the table as folk meet in these next few days?
No, look, all they're trying to do is, at the moment, it's a bit depressing. They're really just trying to frame the agreement and work on an agreement to go forward. almost an agreement to have more talks. The talks almost collapsed in Durban last year, and they finally came up with this agreement. Okay, we will have a treaty where everyone's involved, a single treaty instead of this two-track treaty that we were talking about for the last 5 to 10 years. And we'll have an agreement by 2015 to take action by 2020, which, I mean, all the science tells you is it way too late anyway. Now, whether we're going to get an agreement by 2020, we're not really too sure. There's still a lot of politics to be played. I mean, you've got 193 countries in there. One or two or three countries have the power to sort of derail the discussions. which is why most people think that really, if this is going to be addressed, it's going to be addressed because individual nations take the lead, individual nations do something sort of dramatic and significant, and other people come along.
I guess, Giles, I mean, if this is, you know, we see the likes of the World Bank putting their oar in, that gives us a sense of urgency, I guess, that's gathering. So let's hope that something concrete might come out of these discussions in the next wee while, because you say time is running out.
Well, it is, and I mean, the World Bank's interesting as well because it gets criticised because it's been funding the construction of a lot of coal-fired power stations in the developed world.
Yes.
I think the problem has been that so many good people have talked about this and about the need for action, need to do something, but so few people have actually done something.
Giles Parkinson, thank you for joining us this morning. Giles from New Economy.